So on this week's episode of the Maz Hakim podcast, we have Marissa Peer. Now, Marissa Peer is the author of I Am Enough. It's a best-selling book. She's a nutritionist. She's a relationship expert. She's a hypnotherapist trainer. She's a motivational speaker. She spent 30 years working with people from royalty to rock stars, actors, professional Olympic athletes, CEOs, media personalities, and I have followed her journey for years. I'm absolutely in love with her. So excited to welcome her to the Maz Hakim podcast. Marissa Peer, welcome to Virgin Radio Dubai.
Hi, well, thank you so much for asking me.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure to have you, Marissa. I have followed your journey for years. I think you do absolutely incredible work. I mean, I know that intro was very short compared to, I mean, you're so much more than just those things. You've changed people's lives. So it's such an honor to have you on.
Thank you.
So I want to start off by asking, how do we remove success blocks? Because I know a lot of it's sort of in our mind. I know that's a very broad question, but how do people remove success blocks in their lives?
Do you know, we have a fear of failure. We also have a fear of succeeding. And it's like everything, you have to sort of dissect it. Okay, I've got this fear, like maybe I could say for me when I became a writer, there was a great fear. What if nobody likes my books? But it's like that great book says, feel the fear and do it anyway. So if you have a block, you have to look at it. What am I scared of? I'm scared nobody will buy my book. I'm scared people will buy my book and say it's rubbish. I'm scared of getting terrible. I'm scared that I won't succeed, or if I do succeed, people won't like me. You may be amazed to find that, to know that 70% of lottery winners are utterly bankrupt in 3 years, which is really amazing, except it's not, because if you've never had money and you get money, your life changes and you don't know who your friends are and everything you thought you knew wasn't there. If you came from a broke community, I shouldn't say broke, if you came from a community with very little money and you have a lot, it's so different. If you always pay for stuff, you're showing off. And if you don't, well, what's wrong with you? Don't expect me to pay for a drink, do you? You've just won millions of pounds. So what we love is certainty. Certainty is a human need. And the mind loves what is familiar. And for many of us, success is unfamiliar. I don't know what to do with it. It's so out of my comfort zone. And we're scared of it because our life would change so dramatically. You know, I'm actually really glad that my first book wasn't a bestseller, because I look back, I'd always been on a plane. I'd have been away from my little girl who was everything to me, and it wouldn't have been good for her. Later, now she's grown up, I love being on the planes and going all around the world talking. And it's a difference, you know, people get very vexed about what's going on with them, but you only have to understand something very simple. Your mind loves what it already knows and wants to stay there while avoiding what it doesn't know, because that's what kept us safe hundreds of years ago. You know, if you lived in a fort, you didn't leave and go for a wander around because you were safe staying where you were. And our brain is hardwired to love and return to what's familiar while running away from what is unfamiliar. You see that with 2 years ago, I don't want to eat that, I don't know it. It's the wrong color, it's the wrong bowl. We like what's the same. And it's scary, the unfamiliar, except that if your mind loves what's familiar, you can make anything you like familiar: success, confidence, going outside your comfort zone. So just recognize it's wired into you to fear what's unfamiliar. You have a choice every day. I can make being a speaker, talking to people, finding love, all the things, I can make all of that familiar. It's a choice and then a little bit of action.
So in terms of success blocks, is there anything that we can do sort of to remove those? Because if we know what's familiar and psychologically we do want to remove these success blocks, but maybe we're unaware of it, what can we do to remove them?
You know, for me, my success, not success, was actually relationships. It wasn't career. I came from a family where my parents were desperately unhappy, but I saw my father go to work every day and he was very fulfilled. And I remember as a little kid thinking, that's it, you need a great job, because when it goes wrong, it wasn't even if, when the relationship goes wrong like this, the job, the great job, comforts you, gives you something. And so I wired myself to believe that relationships were terrible, but a career was amazing. And so all my life, I had amazing careers. I worked for Jane Fonda as an exercise instructor in the 80s, boom, did really well. became a therapist, did really well, became a speaker, and then created RTT, but relationships, that was another story altogether. And of course, my father was a head teacher, so I also saw something else, that he was so invested in other people's kids, but not us. So I always felt very inferior and second best. Great material to be a therapist, by the way, because you have a great level of understanding. And then I had to really look at myself and go, what are you doing? You know, attracting the wrong type of people, going into it with this belief that I'm never going to be enough and everything else is more important than me. And I looked at that and thought, but it's a belief. A belief is just a thought you think a lot that becomes a belief. And so I decided to change it. And honestly, it wasn't hard. I had to keep saying, I deserve love. I'm worthy. I'm going to make finding someone who adores me and I have to adore him too, obviously, having a familiar. I'm going to make this familiar. I looked at what a good relationship was. I decided to make it familiar. And I was married 10 months later and we just had our 30-year anniversary yesterday. And we're so happy, but it was a choice. I am making a pattern. Here's the pattern, find the wrong person. So identify the pattern, understand the pattern, change the pattern. And the same thing with career. If you keep saying, well, I keep, you know, not carrying through. So here's another pattern. I keep self-sabotaging. I procrastinate. I've had an idea, but I've left it and I'm not taking it to market. I didn't believe in myself.
Yes.
Well, you have to identify that and then think, but I can change it. See, every day you have a choice. You have a brilliant brain. Everyone listening to this, you have an amazing brain. And you have a choice, talk yourself into it or talk yourself out of it. Rationalize why it's so bad or change it. The worst thing you can do is go, I can't accept it and I can't change it. My career's going nowhere. I'm just stuck. You have to change it or accept it. There's some good stuff about accepting it. And so it's the same for everything. Look at the pattern. What are you doing? I'm scared of being rejected. So is everybody. But you know what? You can write a book that no one likes, but then you write another one. You can start a business that fails, but then you'll learn what you don't like. So it's the fear of being rejected. Everything comes down to a fear of being rejected and not good enough. And then when you think, okay, but nobody can reject me ever, 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 unless I give them my permission, which you never have to do. I mean, look at Ed Sheeran. He was rejected so much. Ed, you got red hair. You got Lily. You got thick glasses. You don't look like a rock star. Look at Eminem, white guy, blonde hair, didn't look like a rapper. So many people who shouldn't have made it, made it. Look at Amy Mullins. I mean, that girl is missing her lower limbs and yet is an amazing athlete and married to Rupert Friend, who is the Carrie's best friend in Homeland. So many people out there who in theory shouldn't have made it, but made it because you have to get over the fear of being rejected. You cannot be rejected. You can hear no and not now and not maybe. You know, if you look at Shark's Shank, or indeed we call it Dragon's Den, so many people who are rejected on that show and said, this is ridiculous. Every time I go to an airport, I see Trunky, the little case that kids take. And that was laughed off Shark's Tank.
Yes.
The Tangle teaser, that was laughed off Dragon's Den, and yet they thought, wow, you rejected me, but I'm just going to keep going. And it's that ability to say, I don't hear a denial, I hear a delay. You might not like me, but I'm going to come back. So if you can have the bounce back factor and the ability to not take rejection personally, then your life will be so much better.
Absolutely agree. And I want to talk about this, you know, negative self-talking, because I think in our day-to-day lives, we don't realize how much we do it. And I know that you're such an advocate of positive self-talk. So how important a negative and not having negative thoughts and negative self-talk?
I think we all have some negative thoughts, but again, it goes back to that same thing. Talk yourself into it. Talk yourself out of it. My husband forgot my birthday. He doesn't love me. My kid's really rude. I must be a terrible parent. Or talk yourself. My husband did forget my birthday, but I could have reminded him. He loves me a great deal. He's just caught up. My kid's rude. You know, all kids are rude. Does that mean they don't respect me? No, it's just the way they speak. So when you have a negative self, what you need to do is you need to turn that critic into a cheerleader. We have a little voice that says, this isn't going to work out. This is going to go wrong. Who are you? That's never going to be. You're not smart enough. But the thing is, it's your voice. No one else is going, oh, no, you're rubbish. It's your voice. And you have the ability to shut that voice down like a radio and turn up a different voice that says, you can do this. And so the way you feel about everything only ever comes down to two things, the words and pictures going on in your head. And that's actually great news because you can change the words and pictures. I remember years ago when I was first a magazine, wanted to write about all my cassette tapes. That's how long ago it was. I used to do a lot of tapes. Now I do downloads. And I was going to meet this major magazine and I was singing this little song, You Can Do It. It's from Cinderella, actually, because my daughter at the time watched a lot of Disney. You can do it, you can do it, you can really, really do it. And then much later, I had a song by Black Eyed Peas, Let's Get This Started. And that was such a good song for me. Or You Got the Power by Snap. So many songs, because what songs do, if the way you feel is down to the pictures you are making and the words, and you sing a little song, it's a game changer. It's why most athletes walk into the arena to a song. It's why most politicians walk into the arena to a song, because it changes the words and pictures. So if you have negative self-talk, if you're down on yourself, if you are your own worst critic, you've got to change that. Yeah. And when you hear something, oh, that's not going to work out. No, it is. I look awful. I am amazing. You know, I was in Estonia only a couple of weeks ago because I created something for children. It's called the Inner Cheerleader, the 5-day challenge. And it's changing that critic to a cheerleader. So we put a big triangle like that on the floor, this huge triangle, and they had to stand at point one and think a really negative thought. And because they were 9-year-old kids, the negative thought was, I don't have friends, no one likes me, I'm not cute, I can't do math. And then they had to run to the next point, which was the feeling, and say, now what's the feeling you feel when you think the thought? And these 9-year-old kids got it. I feel sad, I feel hopeless, I feel not good enough, I feel angry, lots of feelings, I feel frustrated. Yeah. Then they had to run to the final one, which is a behavior that comes from thinking a thought, feeling the feeling. The behavior was, I burst into tears, I get really defensive, I won't ask for help. And they ran the triangle a couple of times to really wire it in. I think a thought, I feel a feeling, and then I behave in a certain way. And then they reversed it. And the ones who said, I don't have friends, I make friends easily. The one who said, I'm not pretty, said, I'm cute. The one who said, I can't, said, I'm great at maths. And then they ran to the point and noticed the feeling was different. I feel good. I feel brave. I feel confident. Now run to the behavior. Well, I talk to people. I invite people on a play date. I ask the teacher, hey, could you explain this to me? Because I'm smart. And so that's how it works. It's like stacking. You think a thought, then you feel a feeling, then you have an action. And this comes first. Thought always comes. So if you're so busy trying to change the action or the feeling, change the thoughts. If your thought is, I'm not good enough to be an entrepreneur, I'm not smart enough to run my own business, what if it doesn't work? What if people laugh at my product? What if no one comes to my store? That's the bit you got to change. But what if they do come? And it's amazing because your thoughts are yours to change. So everything goes back to a thought. Thoughts come first, then feelings, then behaviors or actions. And you got to change this bit, which is great news because that's easy. So whatever your block is, I'm not smart enough to be successful. I'm not worthy of success. Who am I to be successful? Well, who are you not? Of course you're smart enough. Smart isn't often about how educated you are. It's about, have you thought of something amazing that you could create and take to market? You know, many geniuses say that all their best ideas come when they're just lying in the garden looking at trees. That's just how it is. Some people who've written amazing books, written great songs, will say, no, for my deepest heartbreak, I wrote this song, I wrote this movie, I wrote this story, and suddenly it became amazing. Yeah. And that's, remember that book, Normal People, that was everywhere last year. Yeah. And often that does happen. And so successful people, it doesn't mean, okay, I'm a genius and I'm therefore I'm successful. It's, I've thought a thought, there's something I could take to market. Yeah. Who would have thought you could be a millionaire from designing eyebrows or doing makeup tutorials or doing something on TikTok? But the world is amazing now. And it's not about how much you educated. Do you come from money and you look good. It's about, have you got an idea? And could you take that to market? You probably could. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of people in front of you doing exactly what you can do.
You know, during the pandemic, obviously we all went through a bit of an emotional turmoil, some more than others. And I remember watching one of your videos, and along all my mirrors, on all my mirrors in my house, I wrote, "I am enough," with lipstick. And that just stayed on my mirrors. And then I had guests coming over. I feel like I had to justify every time that, oh, no, no, I sort of do think I'm enough, but this is just a reassurance. I don't know.
Well, you know, I created the I'm Enough movement because that's the common denominator of all our issues. If you're fearing success, fearing your life changing, fearing taking a risk, then you have to go back and it's all about not feeling enough. I don't feel good enough, worthy enough, smart enough, interesting enough, talented enough. But it's a feeling, you are enough. And I'm all about very simple things, but the fact that they're simple doesn't mean they aren't profoundly life-changing. And you might notice I have all these bracelets that say I'm enough. I wear them all the time. I have it written all over my house. Because I'm enough can change your entire life. You need to state it and affirm it, write it on your fridge, write it everywhere, wear a bracelet, stamp it on your underwear. One of my clients said, I put it on my kids' pillows. They see that every morning and every night. It's all over their mirrors. And I've had many schools who say, you know, this has been extraordinary. We joined the I'm Enough, and we have kids say it, state it, make a little plaque for their desk. And what's so interesting is they're academically better, emotionally, but bullying has almost ceased to exist in this school because bullies don't feel enough. And it's not enough to work with a kid who is bullied. You have to work. Nobody wakes up and goes, wow, my life's great. Who can I diminish today? I'm so happy. I think I'll go and troll somebody. I think I'll be really mean. It comes from not enoughness. And although it sounds so simple, I am enough, it's actually profound because it's our greatest fear. You know, we all, from the minute we're born, need to find connection and avoid rejection because that's how we survive. If people like us, we'll make it. We're tribal people, after all, who had to belong to a group because safety was a numbers thing. So the not enoughness, we think we're very fragile and we'll die without connection. In fact, the truth is you could live on your own, get to 102, but that wouldn't be fun.
Yeah.
So when you start to say, I am enough, why am I enough? Well, I'm enough because I'm enough. Don't quantify. You're not enough because you've got great designer clothes or thin thighs or a nice car or money in the bank. You're enough because you're enough.
Yeah.
And you have always been enough and you always will be enough. And the mm-hmm. beauty of stating, affirming, embodying I'm enough is that when you do it to yourself every day, you clean your teeth, just go, I'm enough, comb my hair, I'm enough. Get into routine when you're making your coffee. Maybe stick a little sticker on the kettle to remind, oh, that's when I go, I'm enough, I'm enough. Link it to something you do every day. And then what will happen is because you believe it and it will radiate out from you, other people will believe it too. And the sooner you know that you're enough, the sooner the whole world, or almost the whole world, will join you in knowing you're enough because you have to believe you're enough. If you can't believe in yourself, then how can someone else? But when you start it, other people pick it up and it becomes the most extraordinary thing. I mean, I've got boxes and lessons to say, wow, you know, that I'm enough. That, just that one sentence repeated changed my entire life and it can change yours too. Just say it, state it, embody it, affirm it every day and make it your reality because our words shape our reality. If you don't like your reality, one of the quickest ways to change it is change your language, change your thoughts, which changes your feelings and your actions. And it's really easy and really fast.
So I guess in Dubai, it's not the easiest place in the world to meet somebody. The men are always complaining that they can't meet a partner. Women, the same thing. And although there's an abundance of men and women, but everybody's quite busy. What are some of your tips, I guess, for meeting a life partner? Because I think it has a lot to do with energy and not, like you said, not just the action. It's probably a thought. And, you know.
Well, you know, half the world is the opposite sex, even though you may be looking for a same-sex relationship. We all want the same thing. You know, if people go to a psychic, they always say the same thing. Am I going to find someone? Am I in the right career? That we all have the same questions. Will I find love? Will I be happy? Am I going to be okay? Because we're all looking for certainty. So everyone is looking for love. And so the first thing is to decide that you're worthy of love. You know, looking for love with this belief that, oh, I'm not smart enough, I'm not cute enough, I don't have quite enough to offer. I feel a bit like a bargain basement, second rate. If you are going out looking for love with a belief that you're not actually worthy, or, well, I just need to look a bit better, lose a few pounds, wear nicer clothes, and you don't believe you're worth it. So the first step is the easy step. Because mindset, 80% of you finding love will be down to your mindset. So take some time and just say, I'm worthy of love, I'm deserving. I am deeply, deeply lovable. Not because of what I did or said or bought or owned or weighed. I am lovable because I'm lovable. It's like, I'm enough, not because I did, owned, bought, created, because I am. And once you've got to that step where you're wiring in and firing and encoding in the fact that you are lovable, then go to step two, which is, what do you want? Who do you want? They're all around you. And then the third step is go out and find it. But maybe the wrong thing is I'm going to a bar, because everyone's going to a bar. Or the Friday afternoon, in Dubai, I went to many of those, the Friday afternoon brunch that goes on and on.
They're now on Saturdays.
Yeah, I had a friend in the UK who was very lonely and decided to go and work at an animal sanctuary just on weekends. She was feeding baby robins, feeding baby hedgehogs and injured foxes. And she said she was so happy that she loved it. And of course, she met someone who was also volunteering, and now they're married because she found a common interest. So, you know, join a running club. Gyms are obviously a great place to meet someone, but you have to walk in with a belief, I'm so amazing. Someone here is going to just notice me and want to snap me up. And if you walk into your gym or your Pilates or your yoga with that belief, I have got something amazing to offer someone, and I'm so lovable, and I'm what I want wants me, and what I am moving towards is moving towards me. Once you have that belief, you'll find love in an elevator, in a store, anywhere, because you kind of radiate. People say, you know, it's so annoying. I was alone for 3 years, found someone, and that same month I got hit on by three other people. What's that all about? Mm-hmm. That didn't happen for 3 years. Well, because you're giving off an energy. I'm loved, I'm attractive. You know, the day I got engaged, I was going to Spain to work. I was putting my luggage through security, and this guy ran up to me and said, oh, hey, I think you dropped something. And he was hitting on me, but very nicely. And I thought, isn't that funny? No one's ever done that before. So I thought, because I've just got engaged and I'm feeling so desirable, so loved, so wanted. I feel so loved up, if you like. He's obviously tuned into that. I thought, oh, I need to know that person. Actually, the same thing happened when I found out I was pregnant. I was walking through an airport. And that was the only two times. And this guy came up to me. I was sitting with my bag and started to talk to me. And the funniest thing is I just had my pregnancy test in my head. I was just reading it. I quickly put it away, because you give off an energy when you feel lovable. Yeah. But you don't have to be in a relationship to get that. You have to give it to yourself. You have to start saying, I'm lovable, I'm lovable. So in a place like Dubai, is a busy with lots going on, but there are people everywhere. So think outside the box. Who do you want to be with? Where can you find them? Where would they be? You know, go to classes, go to night school or day school, go to gyms, go to a park, walk someone's dog, do something different to what you're normally doing. If you're always doing yoga and there's no opposite sex in yoga, go to the weight room instead. If you're a girl and you want to find love, go to golf, go to poker schools. Loads of guys there and not many women, but many women say, I want to find love and I'm going to Pilates. Any men there? No, all women. I go to a book club, any men, then all women. And men will say, yeah, men should go into the yoga room. Usually the opposite, go to yoga, go to Pilates, go. One of my clients actually went and stayed downtown in LA at a hairdressing convention. It was so lonely. And he met someone there because it's full of women. I just met someone at the weekend who said, you know, I was so lonely. And this is a guy with money. He said, I found a house share. Six women looking for a guy, looking for someone to stay. He said, I took it. because I knew, wow, six women in this house, they've all got friends. And lo and behold, he ended up marrying the best one of the women, because that was quite smart. I'm alone. I'm a bit of a nerd, but I'm a really nice nerd, but I'm not really good at the clubbing thing. But here's a house with six women and they're looking for a roommate. I take that room, because six women by nature will all have friends. That must mean there's 50 women I could meet. And in no time at all, he met the best friend, one of the roommates, and they're so happy. They've got an amazing child. They're just so happy together. But he thought a little differently, not where's a bar, where's a club. I'm a bit nerdy and I want to find someone a bit like me, and we're going to build a great life. And they've definitely done that. They've got a really incredible tight relationship. They like the same thing. You know, I was in LA many, many years ago and I was filming, and there was a group of very, very old men, probably in their 90s, and they were at a buffet, and I noticed one of them couldn't really carry the tray. So I said, oh, let me help you. And I went up and I carried his tray back to his table. I got someone else doing this. They all sit down and talk to us. I was sitting with this group of 90-year-old men. They were so interesting. And then they went, oh, our banker's coming. And in walked this really amazing guy and sat down. I ended up living with him for 3 years. We had great, but, you know, who would have, because these 90-year-old, I mean, I wasn't thinking, oh, these old men, I wanted to help these elderly fun men having their Friday brunch in LA who weren't very mobile. And then had a great time, and lo and behold, their banker turned up and he and I just connected. And it was a really lovely relationship for a long time, but the commuting ended up, I just couldn't keep doing that. Plus I had a charge. He didn't want to move to LA and he didn't want to move to London, but that didn't matter. I wasn't planning that, but it's an unexpected thing. You know, I've gone to see my elderly neighbor, I'm popping in, and all of a sudden I've met their son or their grandson. There's so many ways to meet people outside of the club, but also use dating sites. I know in London we have a great one called Muddy Matches, where you're matched with someone. My friend got married from that. She said, I'm sick of London. Oh, the idea of a farm and a farmer. And she's blissfully happy. She's got chickens and goats, and she hasn't worn high heels for 5 years, but she loves it. But we have, you know, Silver Surfers for older people. There's so many ways. And I think the stigma of dating apps has completely disappeared with Raya, where rich and famous people are on apps. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, they're looking for love. And if you ever think, why can't I find love? Even if you don't want to go, just go on an app and look at the people. And think, wow, all these people are looking for love as well. Because then it takes away the stigma. Look at these people, smart, beautiful. They're all wanting love. Some of them might want hookups. But you have to be single-minded. What you want does want you. And what you are moving towards will move towards you. Once you decide you're worth it, get an idea of what it looks like. That's a big mistake. People don't really look at what it is and they pick the wrong person. So decide you're worth it. Really take a little while to look at what you want. What kind of person, what are they like? What are their values? And then go out and find it. You know, you can't sit on the couch manifesting, because you're only ever going to meet the delivery person. You've got to go outside of your comfort zone and maybe away from the conventional bars and clubs and nightclubs, although many people do meet there. But if you do the first one, I'm worthy of love, you don't even have to find it. It will find you, because there are people everywhere looking for what we want.
There's that famous Rumi quote, what you seek is seeking you.
Absolutely. That's so true.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, people meet on airlines. They meet in the street. They meet everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. Love is all around you. And just got to let it in. It's not a foreign country. It's there. And you can have it and you can keep it for the rest. I mean, my daughter just got married and she met her husband. They were at school together. But they weren't together. And then she just bumped into him somewhere. They knew each other. They went on some event together. And then that was it. They just realized. And they're so happy. But they didn't know at school. At the wedding speech, I said, you know, I never would have complained about her school fees if I'd known that her husband was in her class. And was such a good guy. It was worth every penny. But she didn't know she was going to be with him. And he didn't know. And, you know, common interest is a great thing. You know, finding someone with common interest always helps, but you can have nothing in common and still be the right person. But, you know, don't sit at home and read a book. Go and sit in a coffee bar. Don't spend Sunday reading the papers. Go out and be somewhere active and busy and make eye contact and say hello to people. One of my friends actually met her husband on a plane. Wow. She was walking down the aisle. There were two guys sitting. She sat in the middle. She said, oh, I really felt they didn't like it because I'd got in the middle of their conversation, but I had a middle seat. By the end of that flight, that guy took her number. She said, I didn't even really like him that much, but we got her. And then now they've been married for years and they've got three kids and they're really happy. You just never know who you'll meet or where you'll meet them. But if you have an open mind and you're able to smile and be interested and be nice and believe you're worth it, you'll always find someone because there are people everywhere.
I was single for 2 years and I'm in a relationship now. And as soon as you get in a relationship, it's exactly that. When you go to the mall, you go out, it's just like people are coming out of the woodworks. It's all
you
up
give
to
off this vibe, which is, I'm interesting and I'm lovable. When someone loves you and they go, oh, I just ring your cell just to hear your voice. Oh, I just bought you coffee because you're so great. Oh, you look amazing that. You go around and think, oh, they love me. And you have this glow. And other people find it so attractive that they also hit on you all the time because they pick up that absolute feeling of being lovable. In fact, so many of my clients tell me the same story. I was with someone for years. They wouldn't commit. They were really evasive. Eventually, I had enough. And I left and I never heard. And then I found someone just about to get married. They called me. One of my clients said, actually, the day I found out I was pregnant, my ex-husband said, hey, I'm thinking about you. She said, I'm having a baby. I'm married. Stop calling me.
Yeah, leave me alone.
Apart from that, you never asked me. For our 7 years, you never once asked me to marry you. How bizarre is that? Now I'm already with someone. You want to be with me. But they pick it up. You see, they pick up that energy.
Yeah.
They pick it up that we have a universal brain. And when you're sitting up thinking, nobody wants me, people pick that up. When you think, I am amazing and lovable and worth it. You know, who's the girl who wrote Girls? Lena Dunham.
Yes.
Love her.
Love her.
And she was on a show and that guy said, Lena isn't skinny. He said something about having fat legs and shorts. She said, I'm going to wear shorts for the rest of my life. You better get used to these legs because I'm not hiding them. And I love that. The ability to say, you can't diminish me. I'm not going to let that in. And I was on a flight once with Pierce Brosnan and his wife, Keely. And, you know, she was saying, do you want cake? He said, no, but Keely loves cake. Give her cake. And I thought, I love that. He just loves her. Yeah. She isn't skinny, but he loves her. And many people have partners who are not textbook beautiful. They're not tens. They're not even sevens. They might be fours, but they love them. Because that's what love is. You love someone. Not because they're not perfect, because your imperfections make you real. You know, I have so many clients who are models, supermodels. They're always alone because people just can't relate to them. So you're you and you're great. You've got a personality, you've got a heart, you're interesting. Believe that you are worth love, that someone is going to love you, that you are somebody's fantasy dream come true. You really are.
So let's talk about fertility. So I actually have a few friends of mine who are married. They're trying to get pregnant at the moment, and the doctors are saying there's nothing wrong with them, but you're also a fertility expert. So for all the women, I guess, trying to get pregnant, what do you advise to women who, I guess, are not in sync with all of that?
Well, you know, unexplained infertility in itself is such a fascinating title. Unexplained, what does that mean? It means your eggs are great, your ovaries are great, your fallopian tubes are clear, your womb is great, your partner's already got crack military grade sperm, and yet somehow you're not getting pregnant. And the mind can create many blocks. You know, again, it's our fears. When we have a fear, what if I lose the baby? What if I'm a terrible mother? What if the baby has something? What if? And often we go back to, my mum preferred my sister. My dad preferred my brother. I have many clients who come in, and whenever I regress them back or go back to why they can't get pregnant, they always go back to pretty much the same thing. There's probably about 5 or 6 reasons that you get blocked. One is, I had a termination and I feel so guilty. I don't deserve it. I had a miscarriage. I feel so guilty. The second is I'm really scared of birth. You know, I'm not in control here, or I've worked so hard to get so far in my business, or look the way I look and the baby's going to ruin it. And then the next one is, what if it ruins my relationship? You know, me and my person, we do stuff and suddenly there's a baby. And many people have that fear. What if I don't love the baby? What if my partner loves the baby more than me? What if I'm left on my own? They're all fears.
Yeah.
And you have to take a minute. I mean, I have a great book called Trying to Get Pregnant and Succeeding. I really recommend you read that because it has audios that help you conceive naturally, conceive with IVF, have a perfect pregnancy, and indeed have a perfect birth. But it's all fears. You know, when people get pregnant, they're like, oh, what if I have a miscarriage? What if there's something wrong with a baby? It's never that, oh, I've got pregnant. There's a lot of worry about what if, and many people won't even buy stuff for the baby in case they lose it. So you've got to get into the mindset of, I'm making a perfect baby. My body was put on this planet to recreate. Women are born with all their eggs there. You are born to recreate yourself. Your body knows exactly how to make a baby. It knows how to carry, even knows how to deliver without any help from you whatsoever. People in a coma, by the way, get pregnant and will deliver a baby. So you've got to get past all the thinking. And just remember that you are designed to have a baby. Your body knows what to do. Believe you're making a baby. One of the best things to do is see your baby, talk to your baby. When I was thought I could never get pregnant ever. And even if I could, I would never be able to carry a baby to full term. And even if I could, then the baby would have everything wrong with it. So I was told three bad things. You can't get pregnant, can't carry a baby to full term. And even if you could, it wouldn't be healthy. Yeah. And when I had my perfect baby, that's when I wrote my book, because I realized there were all these blocks. So one of the things that really helped me was to talk to my baby. I was told many times, oh, you're losing the baby, she's not developing. She was born perfectly normal. So talk to the baby that you haven't yet conceived. See it, connect to it, imagine your life together, the swimming pool, the Christmas, Easter, just all the stuff in your house, the paddling pool in the garden, whatever you like. Imagine your baby and tell it no baby will be loved more than you, that you want this baby. You're going to be a great mom, not a perfect mom, but a great mom. So imagine connecting to your baby. And then when you are pregnant, imagine the baby growing perfectly. Keep talking to it. Imagine the birth being amazing, because after all, you're pushing out a human. It's going to be one of the best days of your entire life. And every time you feel the fear, switch it. I'm becoming a great mom. I'm expecting a baby. And there's some great songs you can sing, you know, Be My Baby, Baby Come To Me, When A Child Is Born. Doesn't matter what it is, sing a song, because again, singing takes you out of that negative state. And many of my clients say, no, I was doing IVF, I had to inject myself in the stomach. And I kept singing that song by the Ronettes, Be My Baby, Won't You Be My Baby, I'll Make You So Proud Of Me. And then when I was having the egg collection, I kept singing the song, and I was just so connected to that baby. I could see it, feel it, sense it. Use your imagination, feel your baby nursing. Imagine holding your baby, smell it, taste it, see it, feel yourself pregnant and loving wearing maternity. Imagine in the shower, you've got these massive, amazing breasts and this lovely pregnant tummy, and you're covering yourself in oil and your partner is kissing the baby. And imagine bringing the baby home to a house full of balloons and calves, and maybe playing that song from Stevie Wonder, Isn't She Lovely, as you walk in the room, or whatever you like.
Yeah.
But when you're doing these things, the song, the image, you know, one of my clients said, I bought a pair of baby socks and I put it on my phone cover. I had a little shoe around the phone, and every time I got the phone out, I see the shoe and go, my baby's going to be wearing that shoe soon. There's so many things you can do. Buy a little baby hat, put it at the end of your bed, look at it, buy a little baby lotion every time you open your cabinet to get out your clothes, go, oh, there's the baby cream, I'm going to be putting that on my baby in 9 months, because you're taking yourself into a state of expectancy. I'm expecting the baby, I've got the hat, I got the lotion, I got the shoe, just buy something little, it doesn't matter what it is. In fact, I was with a friend years ago, now her son is 20, and I said, come with me. We're in Portobello, so buy something for that baby now. And she bought a little pair of shoes. I said, I want you to imagine every day that baby wearing those shoes. And she was told she was in menopause early. She was pregnant 2 months later. And actually, I was just at her wedding, and her son, who's now going to give an amazing speech. But It's the sense of I'm expecting, which is opposite to, oh, I'm trying to get pregnant, but I can't fall pregnant. Nothing is happening. My body is saying, no, get into that state. Because what you expect tends to be realized. One of the rules of the mind is our expectations are usually realized. So expect to be super fertile, to believe your partner's sperm is perfect, that you've got grade A premium eggs. Because here's the thing that's so amazing. Many people who can't get pregnant and adopt get pregnant afterwards. Many people who can't get pregnant and have IVF become pregnant naturally afterwards. Why? Well, they're in this state all the time. I had a client who was adopting, and as the adoption was sort of, she said she was pregnant. I said, don't tell them. And she said, I didn't dare tell them because they said this baby had to be just with me. And then I got the baby, it was all signed off. And then 6 months later, I had another baby, but it was amazing. I loved having the two together because while she was going through the, she was buying all the stuff for her baby, planning everything for her baby. When you've had a baby, so I've ever, suddenly your life is about, I need my baby's special food and I need to get the special detergent. Yes. And you're constantly doing things for the baby that you haven't yet got or you have got. And so you get into that state of expectancy. I knew someone who adopted three. She actually, let me get this story right, start again. I met someone who couldn't get pregnant. She tried so hard. They said she was too old to adopt, and so she offered to foster. And one day she got a call saying, we've got these three children taken into care, three siblings. Their life had been horrific. And so she had three children under five, all incontinent, all very needy. And she was only fostering them because she wasn't allowed to adopt because she was too old. But while she was busy running around making lunches and doing their laundry, making their bed, she got pregnant. She had her own baby, but she was allowed to keep those three as well because she was so amazing. And then suddenly she had four children. But while they, her doctor said, it's because you're relaxed. She went, are you kidding me? I got three kids, all doubly incontinent. I certainly wasn't relaxed. That's not why I got pregnant. I got pregnant because I was being a mum. And in being a mum, I became a mum. And that's why the Maasai won't let you carry someone's baby for a whole day if you're having problems conceiving. I know that... Iman held Christie Brinkley's baby for the whole day, carry it around. And because then your brain gets and says, oh, I've got my baby. And all of a sudden the mind kicks in and makes the baby. And even if you're older, do not despair because as your fertility dips, the mind has one last go. All of a sudden, everything has a massive boost to make you pregnant one more time. And late 30s, even early 40s is not old to have a baby, not anymore. People were doing that. Hundreds of years ago, they were having babies in their 40s, and yet now we're so young. So don't allow yourself to believe I'm too old, I'm not healthy, I feel guilty, I've got all these worries. You're designed to have a baby. It's the best thing in the world. Having a baby is just amazing. So allow yourself to have that joy, because there's nothing like it.
What's the name of your book again?
Trying to Get Pregnant and Succeeding. Right. And so many people have got pregnant just from reading that. I mean, the reviews on Amazon will say, I read this and I got pregnant. Somebody wrote to me and said, I read that book, having IVF, and I had twins.
Yes. Wow. That's incredible.
I came from Dubai many years ago and gave some talks about that. And one of the women in my talk got pregnant with triplets and sent me pictures of them. And I loved that. I did two talks in Dubai. Must have been in about 2016. And I was explaining how to get pregnant. And many women that came to those talks now have children, several of them.
My gosh, that's so beautiful. I'll make sure I pass that on to some of my friends. Does the same apply with money, for example? Like everybody wants the same thing.
You know, we learn half of what we learn about money before we're even five.
Yeah.
So, you know, my thing now is I have my own brand of therapy called RTT, Rapid Transformational Therapy. And we've trained 15,000. Many of them are in Dubai. We've been in Gulf News and Emirati Women and other radio stations talking about RTT. Rapid Transformational Therapy. And one of the things we do a lot is money blocks. People come in with all these money blocks. I can't find money. I can't keep money. I can't make enough money. Many of the therapists we train have these blocks. Well, you know, it's such, being a therapist is such a good thing. I shouldn't charge for it. I should be giving, and people shouldn't have to pay. It's not fair if someone can't get pregnant. They've got to pay me to get pregnant. That isn't right. And you have to get rid of all of those blocks.
Yeah.
What you saw about money growing up will really influence your relationship with money, because money is just another form of energy. But if you want to make money, attract money, and be a success, again, you have to believe you're worth it. When someone says, how much is it? And you go, oh, it's $500. And you kind of say it out of the corner of your mouth. You have to say, oh, your investment in working with me is $500. It's actually worth every penny. You're going to get this, this, and this, and this. Because everything we buy, without exception, we buy stuff because of how it's going to make us feel. We pay more for it. Traveling and business. We pay more for designer stuff. We pay more for supplements. We pay more to go to a nice restaurant. Why? Because of how it makes us feel. And as a therapist, and all the 15,000 people I've trained, they understand their job is to give your clients freedom and empowerment. But you have to get over the block of, well, do they want to pay for that? People say to me, this is the best money I've ever spent in my life. You changed my life. And so with money blocks, you have to look at, where did you get them? Why have you got them? Again, it's guilt. It's the same thing. I'm not worth it. If I have more, surely someone else has less. But that's not true. You having more doesn't mean people have less. You know, our program, the five-day challenge we give to schools, it's all free. We don't charge for any of that, including we make the cheerleaders for the schools. We make these mascots. But I couldn't do all of that free work if I wasn't getting very well paid for my paid work. And, you know, a lot of people have this thing about, well, I've got to be a spiritual person and it's wrong to be greedy. And yet I've met many people who have so much money that they didn't know what to do with it. They ended up doing something good. I met someone recently who's so wealthy, he's decided to rewild the whole estate where he lives for no other reason than he can. So he's planting hedgerows, attracting butterflies and birds and bees and endangered things. I know people who said, you know, like Oprah Winfrey, she has schools for children in Kenya. Madonna has schools in Malawi. When you have that much money, you often think, well, might as well do something good now, because what else am I going to spend it on? So we have this belief, I'm a spiritual person, and spiritual people shouldn't pursue money, and it's immoral, it's unethical, it's greedy. But if you are going to do anything good with that money, you're going to do anything good. If you're going to employ people, put some children through school. One of my students said, you know, I never knew when I trained with you that both my kids would go into private school, because this is such an amazing business. It's a business where I earn my own money, working my own hours, but I make people feel good. And I'm getting more and more clients, and I've got two children in private school. That wasn't even a dream a couple of years ago. But a lot of the money blocks is that good people shouldn't be interested in wealth. Good people shouldn't pursue money. Why not? You can, if you can do great things with your money, even the fact that you're employing other people, then that's a great thing.
And I was reading Sheryl Sandberg's book, and she was talking about when she was negotiating her salary with Facebook. And she said, women always accept the first offer. When we're so hesitant, I find that even with myself, I just sort of, I'm so grateful for any opportunity that I'm just like, okay, you know, do you find with women?
80% of women have imposter syndrome, but only 40% or less of men. And I had that too. When I first got a job on television as a therapist on this amazing show, I asked a friend of mine who worked in TV, they said, because they say, how much do you want? You're like, oh, I better not ask for too much. If I ask for too much, I might think, well, that's too much. We'll go with someone else. And she told me something I never forgot. She said, look, if they want you and they've asked for you and they've asked you how much you want, tell them how much you want. Do not start low. If it's too much, they'll negotiate you down. They go, oh, no, that's too much. But if you start low, you can't negotiate up. So ask for what you want, because the people you're asking will either say, okay, or they'll say, well, actually, that's a bit out of it. You know, I gave a talk for Chanel, a woman who said, oh, your budget is too high. For Chanel? I'm like, wow. And they said, can you reduce it? I'm like, I don't go into Chanel and say, can you reduce that bag? I would never say, can you reduce that T-shirt? I can't afford it. So I was really interested that Chanel and several other cosmetic companies asked me to speak, would look at my figure, that's out of our budget. And so I said, oh, okay. And they said, but, because I didn't go, oh, I'll reduce it. I went, well, that's my fee. They went, well, I'll tell you what. How about if we give you a voucher to spend? I said, that's great. I've got my Chanel watch and
all
the Chanel. Because they pay my fee, but they paid what they had planned and they gave me the rest in products. That was a win-win for me. And so often when people say, oh, you know, that's a bit too much. I mean, I will reduce it. I'm happy to reduce it, but often I don't. And then they go, but what we could do is we could give you this tour. You could stay here. You can bring your daughter. I was speaking at this amazing place last year. And they said, well, this is our budget, but you can bring your daughter and her husband. They can have a honeymoon. It was the most amazing place. And my husband, we had the best time, all four of us. It was so lovely. It was an amazing bonding time together in this beautiful, luxurious place. So it's very easy to go, oh, it's too much. I shouldn't ask for that. It's that, again, I'm not worthy. And you have to always go back and say, no, I am worthy. And women are very bad, but men too, they get very worried about the business of being rejected. But then after a while, it becomes easy to say, this is my fee. Oh, this is I don't talk about money. I talk about the investment. And of course we have people that train with us and we have some people who say, you know, I can't afford it. We're just about to start doing scholarships. We really want to train, particularly black guys, black men. They are so underrepresented in the therapy world and yet they're so needed. So we're really excited about now beginning to offer scholarships to certain people that would be amazing therapists and are so needed. But don't be scared of asking for what you want. And also don't be scared when you want something about negotiating. You know, I really want this, but I can't afford it. What's the best deal you can give me? If you can't reduce the price, I'm buying a phone, but what can you give me a guarantee? Can you give me some accessories? Never be scared of negotiating down, but also never be scared of negotiating up. Once you have that you're worth it mentality, you'll be okay.
I love that. And what about with food, relationships with food? I mean, you speak to a lot of people about how to have a better relationship with food. And does this also come down to, you know, not feeling enough? Because I know I have a sugar addiction. I think a lot of people do. But
I have had those for years.
Yes. How do we remove this addiction?
Our relationship with food is very primitive. When you're a baby and you're feeling sad or someone picks you up and feeds you and all of your needs are met by being fed, you feel loved, you feel connected, you feel significant. Your mum has to spend a lot of time with baby, feeding it or spooning in the yogurt. You just can't leave them alone with a banana. So you feel connected, significant, worthy, all of these feelings when you're fed. And you're fed a very interesting thing, milk, mother's milk. It's half fat, half sugar. And for years afterwards, we think, oh, I'm feeling a bit bored. And we go back to what that means. And nobody says, I'm so down, I think I'll have some spinach. We always want something that's half fat, half sugar. There's nothing in nature, by the way, that's half fat and sugar. There's fatty foods like avocados and nuts and seeds. And there's sweet food like mango, but there isn't a combination. The only combo is in milk, breast milk. And so we're forever trying to get that feeling back. And also sugar was very scarce. When we lived in tribes, we could find honey occasionally, fruit, but it wasn't there all the time. So when we found it, our primitive brain would go eat all of that because it will be gone soon. And of course, sugar never poisoned you. You never get poisoned from eating some mangoes or some honey. Bitter foods are more likely to be poisonous, even berries. So the fructose was very good. You found some honey, you ate masses of it, you found some mangoes, you knocked yourself out on those. It kept you going for a long time and it never made you sick. And all these years later, our brain still has that belief, oh, that sugar is rare. You might not find it again for months. Eat lots of it, it will keep you going. And so we are hardwired to find sugar, to remember where it is, to go back for more. Also hardwired to be scared of hunger, because hunger killed you more than war, more than anything. The thing that killed us was not war and disease, it was famine. Even just a few hundred years ago, that was still going on. So our brain is really scared of hunger and makes us feel panicky. When we're panicky, we will eat anything, jelly beans, taco chips, chocolate bars. When we're stressed, the first thing we give up are our healthy eating habits. And so I created a program called Dietless Life because I've been in the industry since I worked for Jane Fonda in the late 80s, and I realized that the whole dieting industry is based on abuse. Punish those pounds, go on a strict diet, a starvation diet, do a punishing workout. And the whole industry is based on hating your body and being dissatisfied and trying to force it to change. And the only way you can ever have a body you love is to love the body you have so much. You wouldn't dream of eating Krispy Kreme donuts or Pop-Tarts for breakfast. So I began this movement called Dietless Life, and it was all about love your body, come at it with respect, the way you wouldn't have a newborn baby and give it a donut for breakfast. I hope you wouldn't, or give it a can of Coke. You think, oh, its body is so pure and I want it to be healthy. And so once you get into that mindset of, if I love my body, it will love me back. If I do one nice thing for my body, well, maybe three, drink more water, put more good stuff in and sleep. Well, if I just do those things, my body will do so many things back. And it's been astonishing. We started it in, is it May? We started it in May. We did the first cohort 3 months. Every week I do live hypnosis with the whole group, hypnotize them, take them back to have a look at where they got these limiting beliefs from, change them, give them a recording to play. And each week you learn something new about what's going on with your body. And it's been astonishing. And a lot of people are saying, no, I'm actually doing it with my children. People are reporting the most amazing results because they stopped hating their body and trying to force it to change. And you see, when you go on a diet, all you ever do is lower your resting metabolic rate until every time you eat normally, you're actually gaining weight. And then when you're overweight, your resting metabolic rate drops again. So dieting really messes you up. And you shouldn't diet. You should eat great food. And now we know all about microbiome, and that microbiome affects your ability to lose weight. It affects how you store fat. And so a lot of things you need to do is, when you're looking at food, instead of thinking, oh, I want that, ask yourself a question. It isn't what you want. It isn't what your mind wants. It's what your body wants. And even more, what does your microbiome want? It wants lots and lots of vegetables. You know, every time I eat, I was out for my wedding anniversary, and I always think, what does my microbiome want? Which isn't what I want. I go, oh, I want cake. But my microbiome wants lots and lots of different vegetables. So I always look at that. And I used to eat the same stuff all the time, spinach and tomatoes. And I thought, no, no, that's not right. I've got to eat other stuff. And now I'm always giving myself a variety of vegetables, because it's not about taking bad stuff out. That isn't what it's about, putting good stuff in. And if you find something that works, you don't have to stick to it. It will stick to you. So our microbiome, you know, it is so important. And what you eat affects everything, how you store fat, your moods. And all you have to do is I call it the five R's. You should eat food that roams or groans, that you can recognize what you're eating, that rots naturally, that you could eat raw even if you wouldn't ever want to, and that you can recreate in your kitchen. If you can look at those five R's, does it roam or grow? Well, eggs and fish and berries and vegetables and nuts and seeds roam or grow. Do they rot? Absolutely. Can you eat them raw? You see, you can eat raw nuts and seeds. You can eat raw eggs. You may not want to, but you can. But you can't eat flour raw. You can't eat red kidney beans raw, because they're what you create niacin from. Can you recognize it? I can recognize a tuna fish or a pear anyway, but I can't recognize what's in a pretzel or a tub of Pringles. I couldn't recreate Pringles in my kitchen, or indeed Coca-Cola, or indeed jelly beans. You need a science lab to make that stuff. So if you just remember the five R's, it really helps you, and you can have anything that way. And the other thing about dieting is all about insulin. And when you've got insulin, your insulin levels are high, it's impossible to lose weight. And every time you eat carbs, which turn to sugar, your insulin levels go up. And it's not about, you know, being one of these super virtuous people. Like, for instance, if you have oats for breakfast and your thing is oats, milk, bananas, honey, have the oats, but take off the bananas, put in some nuts and seeds. When I have oats, I put in pumpkin seeds and chia seeds and hemp seeds. bit of almond milk, even a tiny bit of salt, and I'm having the same breakfast really, but I've taken out all the sugar and I've turned it into protein, because it's all about fat burning. And to fat burn, you have to look at it. Protein burns fat, carbs store fat. But that doesn't mean you can never have carbs. If you're used to having toast with jam on it, put peanut butter on it. If you have pasta with loads of tomato sauce, have less pasta and cover it in oil. Because you want to make it protein. The more protein you can add, so if you had a potato, baked potatoes, and you put in baked beans, that's just now a double carb. So if you have a baked potato, put in a fried egg, drizzle it in oil, put some really nice Celtic salt on it, and make it more protein. You want to keep adding protein to carbs, and then you'll stay in fat burning. When you add carbs to carbs, you stay in fat storing. So breakfast cereals and toast and jam and chocolate croissants and having a latte with a muffin is probably one of the worst things you can do, but you can have a latte with fat in it. You know, if I have for breakfast an avocado, I put oil on it. And then I put a little bit of salt on it. And it's amazing because it's pure fat burning. When you wake up in the morning, you're in fat burning. So just stay there by having a fat burning breakfast, avocados, eggs, spinach. You can have like soya yogurt or coconut yogurt or sheep's yogurt, but put nuts and seeds in. Don't put fruit in it. Don't put honey in it. Don't put anything like that in it. And then it becomes easy. So it's all about keeping your body fat burning rather than fat storing by looking at insulin and keeping your insulin levels low. Looking at your microbiome, but making it very, very workable. And Dietless Life is amazing because there's no diet. You can actually eat whatever you want. If you love pizza, you can have one. But you want to be really aware. You want to have a very thin crust. You want to have olives on it and tuna fish and keep lowering the carb content and adding all the great stuff that your body loves. You know, people think fat is bad for you. Fat is your best friend. Sugar is your enemy. Fat is your friend. Increase the fat, minimize the sugar, and you'll have an amazing body that will last you a long time too.
I love that so much, honestly. That I literally have to re-listen to this and take notes because I think that'll really help.
When we do the next cohort of Dietless Life, it's starting. I'll give you a free ticket. Come and join us because you want to talk about it. So it's starting in September and it's once a week for 3 months. But I'll give you a free entrance to it.
Oh my gosh, I would absolutely love that because my relationship with food is on.
Well, we have a relationship with food and it should really be our friend. You know, it's like they say, make food be your medicine and medicine be your food. And we should eat delicious, healthy food that keeps us well, but we're so busy eating just, you know, I remember when I was in Dubai doing that Friday afternoon. What's it called? I forgot.
What's that Friday afternoon? The brunch.
I mean, I think it's like three rooms, just one for the dessert. So much. Oh my God, it's free. I've got to eat everything, but it's not free.
Exactly.
You remember an expression, take whatever you want and then pay for it. And all those cakes and all those cocktails and all those pastas and fries are not really free. You do pay for it. So you're much better to, especially at buffets, to take all the good stuff first and eat that. And then have a little dessert, but don't keep going back for more. Just take one little, one little piece of cake. You see, if you're going to have dessert, you want to have something with fat in it. The worst thing to eat is jellies and candies because they're just sugar. At least if you have a piece of chocolate, a piece of cake with a lot of fat, that will slow down the sugar. Like I used to eat strawberries. Now I'd have strawberries with a lot of fat on them because it slows down the sugar. I'd have less strawberries, more fat, because it's good for you. So you just got to learn how to eat every day. And most people give up dieting because it's so restrictive, it's so difficult, it's so boring. And also, our motivation for dieting is wrong. It's, I'm going to diet so I look better in the mirror and the scales say less. When they do, and my motivation is gone now, I'm going back to eating badly.
Absolutely. And finally, Marissa, oh my God, we only have 5 minutes because I've run out of the 40 minutes again, but I wanted to just ask finally, what are a few things people can do day to day, easy things that can really help them level up their life?
Well, one of the best things you can ever do is to look in the mirror and go, I'm enough. You know, be your own cheerleader. Say things like, hey, you're great. Look at you. You've got a nice smile. You're a good person. You've got something to offer the world. So praise makes you grow and criticism withers you. So if you make praise familiar, self-praise, tell yourself, I'm a good person. Praise yourself more, criticize yourself less. Join the I'm Enough movement. Buy that I'm Enough book or buy my new book, Tell Yourself a Better Lie. You know, we give away lots of these I'm Enough bracelets. So go to imenough.com, join that. Go to rtt.com. And if you go to marissapeer.com, we've got lots of free audios. They're absolutely free. We don't ask for your credit card. On love blocks, money blocks, health blocks. Take whatever you want. They're all free. But read that book, I'm Enough, because it will really, it's like $10, but it's got four downloads in it, which cost $35 each. So it's pretty much we're giving that away because I want everyone to know they're enough.
Love that so much. It's such an honor, Marissa. Thank you so, so much. It's a wonderful reminder that we are all enough.
We are, and we always have been, and we always will be. And if you know it, everyone else will know it too, because no baby is wanting, I'm not enough. They ask for attention. They know they're enough. So all you're doing is getting back something you were born with. You are reactivating and regenerating what is your birthright, and you had it. And getting it back is not hard. It's actually really easy.
Thank you so much. So wonderful. Thank you. Such a pleasure, Marissa. And I would love to do the dietless life.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I'll see you when we're coming to Dubai, I think next year, to teach RTT. So let's meet.
Oh my gosh, I would absolutely love that.